4 minutes. If your couch is on fire, get out of the house. Seriously, it's incredible. I've lit these things, and it's just incredible how quickly a room can go to flashover. And unfortunately, when they made that film, they didn't go look at the floor afterwards. But I've done some tests and went and looked at the floor afterwards, and you know what? It looks like somebody poured gasoline all over the floor. And when I first learned that, I was really taken aback, because I had been going out for 10 years looking at floors, and that looks like gasoline on the floor. Now, I never did call them arsons unless the laboratory came back positive, and I ran the laboratory, and I trusted my laboratory. But there's a lot of people who don't trust the laboratories. In most of these cases, you know, the fire investigator, particularly a guy like Vasquez, was working back in the 70s when laboratories put forward a lot of false negatives in arson cases. Now they put forward false positives because they've gotten so sensitive. But back in the day, we were not very sensitive. This is Vasquez. The fire tells the story. I'm just the interpreter. I'm looking at the fire, interpreting the fire. That's what I know. That's what I do best. And a fire does not lie. It tells me the truth. Well, you know what? You can misinterpret what it tells you. And he misinterpreted like crazy. The first incendiary indicator is autoventilation. When you saw that window break out, that was autoventilation. Happens all the time. And he thought that autoventilation was a sign of arson. That might explain why most every fire he looked at, he called arson. Here he says wood fire does not exceed 800 degrees. Well, you know what? Wood and gasoline burn at the same temperature. You got a higher heat release rate from gasoline. Well, when a blacksmith wants to increase the temperature of his fire, he does not change the nature of the fuel. He blows air on it. So he's got this in a, he saw a melted aluminum threshold, and he said that's proof of arson. And then he's got crazed glass, the pieces of the broken window glass to the northeast bedroom disclose a crazed spider webbing condition. This condition is an indicator that the fire burned fast and hot. It's not. It's absolutely not. It's a myth. I knew it was a myth the first time I heard it, because I used to craze glass when I would screw up a chemistry experiment and put water on it to try and cool it off quickly. But it was accepted all over the place. People cited this book from the National, by God, Bureau of Standards that said crazed glass indicates rapid heating. Now, when the National Bureau of Standards says something, most scientists say, it must be true. They wouldn't print it if it wasn't true. They codified a half a dozen myths in this book. And this book got quoted throughout the 80s and the 90s even in textbooks. Because when the National Bureau of Standards says it, everybody figures it's a good reference. They had a lot of input from the National Fire Academy, where most of these guys got taught. This book was one of the leading texts in 1991, and it said that crazed glass indicates rapid heating. Here's some crazed glass. I wrote my initials in that crazed glass with a wet Q-tip, and then I sprayed the lower left corner with water. I can make glass craze uniformly just by getting it hot, whether it's fast or slow, and spraying water on it. But that's one of the things that convicted Todd Willingham. Now, you can, once in a while, rarely, look at a pattern on a floor and say that it's caused by a flammable liquid. This is one of those times. But even in this case, I was able to see, when I could smell it. I could smell the mineral spirits and tested it when I got to my laboratory. This is a test fire. It looks like a pour pattern. In fact, I can illustrate it with PowerPoint. I can draw the edges so the jury can see. They can see the hole burned in the floor. Not a drop of accelerant. Not a drop of accelerant. That's a natural pattern there. I call it the myth that will not die. People today say they can look at the floor and tell that it's a flammable liquid pour pattern, even once the room has gone beyond flashover to full room involvement. The question that really needs to be asked with a pattern like this is, why didn't it burn on the sides? And the reason it didn't burn on the sides is the floor protected it. There was something on the floor protecting it from the heat of the flashover. Here's a puddle pattern. There was an old couple down in Florida got denied their insurance claim because a pattern like this appeared on their floor. This is not a liquid pour pattern. This is caused by a cardboard box burning on the floor. A guy in Arizona did 8 years before the judge was clued in to the fact that flashover can cause patterns like this. But look at the right angles there. I mean, the question shouldn't be why did the floor burn, but why didn't those areas of the floor burn? This is a famous pour pattern from the Lime Street fire. Again, a flashover fire, protection in some places, exposure in others, causing that pattern. This is the pattern from the Willingham case. And this is what his lawyer looked at and said, looks like a flammable liquid pour. In fact, his lawyer actually went out and bought some carpet, poured gasoline on it, and lit it on fire, and it looked like that, so he said, this must be a real arson fire. This is more Willingham patterns. What this is a burned floor. It means nothing. But the fire marshal told the jury that it meant that there was flammable liquid burning on the floor. This thing needs a new battery. Well, the science is different now. This is a Texas fire marshal talking to the Chicago Tribune in 2004. At the time of the Willingham fire, we were still testifying to things that weren't accurate, or that aren't accurate today. They were true then, but they aren't now, as if the laws of physics have changed. I'm sure he meant to say something else, but I love that quote. But it wasn't just the fire, folks. It wasn't just the bad science with the fires. This is what they used to get him sentenced to die. Posters. This is from that psychologist. There's a hooded skull with wings and a hatchet. Shows that he's a monster. All of these are in fire. Depicting it reminds me of something like hell. And they're a picture, a Led Zeppelin picture of a falling angel. And there's association many times with cultive type activities, a focus on death and dying. Many times individuals have a lot of this type of art, have an interest in satanic type activities. You know, I could see if it were just Iron Maiden, but Led Zeppelin? Really, what about Stairway to Heaven? And then we have Dr. Death comes in, and he said he's an extremely severe sociopath. No pill or treatment would help him. And then, as David mentioned, he got kicked out of the American Psychiatric Association for making diagnoses of people whom he had never met. Now, my question is, who puts this stuff into evidence? Who does that? And there's only one word to describe it. Forgive the foul language, but that's the only word I can think of to describe that kind of trial work. And this is the problem. This is the problem. Let's see, go back. I get in civil cases all the time. And in civil product liability cases, there's almost always a Daubert challenge these days, where the lawyers say, oh, John, you're not using the science correctly. You shouldn't be allowed to testify. And there have been literally thousands of people excluded in civil cases under Daubert, where the standard of proof is a preponderance, not beyond a reasonable doubt. In criminal cases, it almost never happens. In fact, it makes headlines. It makes headlines when a judge excludes testimony in a criminal case. So, we can't count on the courts. And that's the takeaway message, is we've got to clean the act up upstream of the courts, because the judges are not going to, they're not going to do it. So that's what I have, and my time is up. Thank you.